You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to Kinda Funny's Christopher Nolan in Review. That's right, we are ranking and reviewing every movie directed by Christopher Nolan. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by Andy Cortez.
Wow.
Greg Miller. Nick Scarpino and Kevin.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, man.
How's your little car doing, Greg?
Don't touch my totem. Only I know how much it weighs. Totem. That's okay. My totem.
No, Greg, does it weigh or do you roll it and you know how far it has to roll before it stops? Because I remember, if you're in the dream, you roll the car, it just keeps going until it goes through a wall and keeps
going. Sure, yeah, that'd be a good way. That'd be one way to figure it out, yeah. Yeah, no, but I would go by the...
Wouldn't the incline affect how fast
it would very much, Kevin. Yeah, okay. Think about it, too. What if I'm inside of buses, it's going off a bridge, you know what I mean? It's going to be all squirrely-whirly.
I'll be like, Nick, you pulling out a level and being like, okay, hold on, this is a 30-degree angle here. All right, so it'll roll...
Either that or you have to make Porty your totem, where you just know the weight of him, like that dead weight in your arm, where he's just like, you know? Where is he? Show us our king.
Yes, our king.
Yes. I'm not dreaming. All hail him.
I love it. It's good. It's good you're not dreaming, Greg Miller. We do this show every Tuesday right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames live. You can watch it later on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com. You can also listen on your favorite podcast service to search for Kind of Funny Reviews. On Fridays, we're also doing the Studio Ghibli Miyazaki movies, so check those out. We're doing a Kiki's Delivery Service.
Kiki!
Friday, which for in review listeners, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you're going to have to deal with Nick. Belinda's not ready. I can tell you that much.
I don't have a Kiki.
Anyways, you can get the show ad-free by going to patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like our producer, Muhammad did. Momo.
Hey, Momo.
You'll love to see it. You'll love to see it. He's finally
Thank you, Momo.
It.
Thank you
for How you guys doing?
Supporting us.
I'm good. Good. I'm cold for some reason. Yesterday it was chilling. Beautiful. Today I go out to get a cup of coffee, and I'm cold.
I like it.
Well, you're drinking a cold coffee, too.
That's my
Nick,
third.
You don't have a beanie on either.
Up, man. Get in there, you know? Put a little whiskey in there. Get a little warm.
Just spike it a little bit. Yeah. I have zero alcohol in my apartment right now. How sad is that?
I expect no less from you. You know what I mean? Yeah, your body and your apartment is the temple.
It's true. It's treated like a temple.
Today we're talking about Inception, released on July 16th. 2010. After the 2002 completion of Insomnia, Nolan presented to Warner Brothers a written 80-page treatment for a horror film envisioning dream stealers. Deciding he needed more experience before tackling a production of this magnitude and complexity, Nolan shelved the project, instead worked on the Batman movies and Prestige to kind of up his game. This one, once again, directed by Christopher Nolan. So many facts today, guys, for a movie like this. There's just so much good stuff. Including facts based on facts like the rundown that we normally don't get to. So a budget of $160 million, a box office of $829.9 million, and a runtime of 2 hours and 28 minutes. And for the first time ever, we have a fact based on the runtime. The Edith Piaf song, Non Je Ne Regrette Edith Rien. Piaf.
Oof, that's a rough one.
You got that. You nailed it.
I thought you were going to give me props for it. It's used as a plot device. The movie's runtime, 2 hours and 28 minutes, is a reference to the original length of the song, which lasts, on its first recorded edition, 2 hours and 28 seconds. When Cobb asks his kids what they've been doing at the end of the movie, they answer, and when you look at the captions, building a house on a cliff, referring one back to the beginning of the movie of Saito's house on a cliff. The movie explains to the audience in the significance of Fisher's number in that it will subconsciously keep reappearing in dreams, the phone number, hotels, safe combo. In light of this, the audience can watch the whole movie prepared and notice that the train that ran Cobb and Mal over in Limbo had a number on it. A combination of those numbers is used on the taxi cab that Mal and Cobb get out of in the real world, as well as in the hotel room in the real world. Suppose the whole movie was a dream. If it was, then writer, producer, and director Christopher Nolan cleverly made the movie exactly 2 hours and 28 minutes long for a reason. The song continually played to wake people up from the dream that is 2 minutes and 28 seconds using that song of the movie. And Christopher Nolan goes in and he's like, yeah. And I'm like, you motherfucker, dude, you're crazy. There wasn't a video like the last couple of movies that I've watched where Christopher Nolan's just straight up breaking it down. A lot of this is taken from a bunch of different interviews, but he's very consistent in what he says and doesn't say about the stuff. And I really appreciate that.
It was, I would have loved to have been on Reddit while while this movie is going down. The theories, the amount of people speculating about, you know, dream states and so many people being so many levels deep. Like, I love this shit. I ate this shit up.
This movie's 10 years old. It came out in 2010 in mid-July. So 10 years and 2 weeks. We got this. Wow. I saw this in theaters. Did you guys?
Yeah. I saw it in theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a fuck. I saw this in theaters and I was like, I was blown away by it the first time I watched it. And I can't remember if I've seen it since, but this is the first time I've watched this movie in a very, very long time. And I got to say, I didn't have as positive of a reaction to it as I had hoped. I was actually kind of bored the entire time. Now, granted, you know exactly what's going to happen. And I kind of understood sort of the world, but so much of the fun part of watching this movie the first time was having them literally just stand there and explain like the rules of this sleep world that you can go into. And once you kind of know that, I'm like, wow, man, this movie is like 80% exposition. It's 80% literally Joseph Gordon-Levitt telling Ellen Page and thus the audience like how this whole thing works. And I was a little bit bored this time watching it again. I got to tell you,
what? I'm with Nick on this one. It's something I've just noticed here in Nolan review is that I love these movies. I think Nolan's incredibly talented, so on and so forth. But I think for his movies to exist, usually, and I shouldn't say even usually, but like usually with like having a hook to him or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just that thing of once you know it, it's like, granted, you can go through and rewatch it. And like even with The Prestige last week where I kind of turned around on it, I got more positive as we went and talked about it. I still didn't go back and watch Prestige. I thought that was cool. But it's the same way for Inception of finishing it. And then I remember watching it in theaters and going out to the bar afterwards and having all these conversations about it. And what did you think? And where'd you go? Doing it again, I'm just like, okay, cool. And I'm with Nick of like, at one point you had to pause for a thing like, oh man, it's a long ass movie, huh? 2.5 hours. Okay. Like, yeah. But I mean, I still can't give him enough credit for, you know, making Persona 5 the movie here and explaining everything and having, you know, the projections and having all the stuff and having it all make sense. This is such heady concepts and stuff. I enjoyed the film still. Don't get me wrong, but I was. Yeah. Same way of like, all right, you know, I'm ready to.
I mean, but so much of it is that sort of like, hey, where there's a mystery and we're unraveling it and we're building this world and this crazy stuff and it's open to interpretation. It's similar to like an M. Night Shyamalan movie where, like Sixth Sense, right? Blew you away the first time. You watch it again, you're like, oh, it's cool to see how he set that up. But obviously, I know the big where surprise at the end. So the emotional impact or any impact of it is thereby lessened. But it was, you know, it's cool to see all those actors on screen again. And it's interesting, but man, the first like 20, 30 minutes of this movie, he's just walking around with Ellen Page being like, here's how all this works. And I'm like, but I know how it all works. Can we skip the tutorial? Can I go right into the gameplay already?
I feel like that's
the thing I disagree
minutes.
with what you're saying, because I feel like watching this and especially looking into like theories and all this stuff, it's like there's so much shit that like if you're looking for, you get other things out of it. And it's like the heavy exposition, I think, works so much in favor for this movie because it is such deep, ridiculous stuff, but it sets up rules that if you start like falling down different timelines or not timelines, but like different angles of stuff going on, instead of focusing exactly on like the conversation they're having, when you're like looking around at like things going on around them, or like there's like weird theories about what his totem is. And it's like if you start like looking into that and then watching the movie with that lens, it's crazy.
No,
this shit goes.
And I totally understand all that. It's just that when you break this movie down, it is and Nolan does this sometimes, and he can break that rule because he understands it. But this is literally the opposite of show don't tell. This is literally characters being like, this shit is so deep and meta, and this is a concept that's so hard to get across visually that we have to sit here and tell the audience what's happening beat for beat. And there's a moment in the climax of this movie where they're like, we got to go one more in, you got to go get him in limbo. And someone has to literally turn to the camera and be like, just so you know, we're going 5 layers deep now, and limbo could be 10 years. And that's why the guy's old. Okay. And now back to the action. And we go back to like, and then we just have Tom Hardy running around beating people up, cause we have to have something visually to see. And then he comes back into the room. And you're like, why did he go kill those guys? Whatever.
But the thing that makes it interesting though, is like when they have the exposition, they create those roles. There is that, what we watch, just the one thing where on your first viewing, you understand the plot because they're telling you what it is, and then you're seeing that thing happen. But then you apply those rules of the exposition to other characters and their experiences. That's when it's like, there's so much deeper things happening. Sure. Like the end, the open to interpretation of the top and all that stuff. It's not just like, is he in a dream or not? It, there's so many other perspectives and theories that you can look at of when you apply those rules, those simple rules of exposition that they express, it can totally change the tone of the movie. Of like, there's different theories that fully go through and follow the exact same rules that were given that imply that the wedding ring that Leonardo DiCaprio has is his totem, and you only see it in, hold on, let me read the actual thing here.
Sure.
Well, for sure the top was her totem, right? Wasn't that Mal's totem?
It's implied that he adopted it after Mal died, right?
Right, but there's an issue where she locked it away in the safe, and that's the thing he had to go and get. And his and like, I always sort of interpreted that as being like he holds on to that until he can let go of the memory of her. But like,
so there's a theory with that stuff, Nick, of it being her totem and like him being involved, that the whole thing is actually Inception in his mind, and it is Mal trying to incept this whole idea for him to move on, and he's the one that's actually
stuck in a loop. Yeah, yeah. It's I mean, that's definitely something you get at the end of it, where you're like, he needs to cope with this whole thing. He doesn't want to leave the dreamscape. He's there. And at the end, when he goes out, even when he goes out to his kids and the top keeps spinning, you know, obviously there's a moment where it moves a little bit here and there, it's supposed to be open to interpretation.
He's clearly dreaming though, right? He's clearly dreaming.
No.
Mal was right.
Not at all. I think
I think you're just not supposed to know.
No, I mean, let me read this part.
But it wobbles, but it doesn't fall down. And his kids don't age at all, Kevin. Down. They don't age at all. And then he has the exact same vision of them. That makes no sense.
I mean, maybe it's only
Months. You're wrong.
Maybe it's only been 6 months.
You know, so they wore the exact same clothes and played in the exact same sport. That makes sense, yeah.
Nolan confirmed that the ambiguity was deliberate, saying, I've been asked this question more times than I've ever been asked any other question about any film I've ever made and probably ever will. What's funny to me is that people really do expect me to answer it. The film's script concludes with, behind him on the table, the spinning top is still spinning and we fade out. Nolan said, I put that cut there at the end, imposing an ambiguity from outside the film that always felt the right ending to me. It always felt like the appropriate kick to me. The real point of the scene, and this is what I tell people, is that Cobb isn't looking at the top. He's looking at his kids. He's left it behind. That's the emotional significance of the thing. Yeah. To him, this is reality.
He's accepted this is reality. Yeah.
Yeah. I am just always so impressed by this movie. This movie I've probably seen the most second to The Prestige. And it still hits me in every moment that it should. And every big buildup still gets me going and my heart is racing. And I think he does such a great job with, there's something deeper and darker happening. And Leonardo DiCaprio is sort of kind of telling you the behind the scenes of what's kind of really happening. And we cut back to action that I still enjoy. I think this movie is like, while we're watching, it's like, this is so pretentious, right? And it's become kind of a meme in pop culture to make fun of loving Inception. And you're kind of, you know, it's like kind of silly to like, you like Inception, but it's so heady and it's so all over the place. But damn, I love it. Like, it just, it hits every note for me where it's,
is it really a thing where they're like, do you want to make fun of that? I mean, Inception's a masterpiece. This movie.
Yeah. I think it's a type of the movie where the Simpsons will make fun of it and Family Guy will make fun of it. And like, it's one of those South Park will kind of make fun of it. Bob's Burgers. Bob's Burgers. It's one of those movies that gets referenced in pop culture as like, I still don't get what happened to that movie, but you know, what was really going on? But it still blows me away from a craftsmanship perspective. And yes, they are throwing all these really heady. I mentioned the same thing that Nick actually said a little while ago, where I was like, all right, this is a great tutorial level. But it's still so good and it moves so fast for me. It was 9:30 and I was with Tim and we watched it and I thought it was over so fast. And but so you're funny. Still going, and there's incredible moments, and then suddenly Joseph Gordon-Levitt's fighting in a hotel room that's spinning, and it's fucking awesome. Like, this movie is awesome.
it's interesting because the movie, for this upon watching it a second time, it was the opposite, right? Where every time they kept cutting back to that van that was slowly just falling into the ocean or into the bay below, I was like, that is kind of what this movie's like for me, where I just kind of want that thing to hit. And you start looking at it, I'm like, I get that he's like, we're fighting, everyone's fighting their own little battle on each layers. Level of the thing. But at a certain point, I was like, I don't really, I don't know. I sort of lost interest in sort of what was happening. But what's interesting is what I did find interesting a lot more this time around was everything between Leonardo DiCaprio and Mal, which prior to that, I was like, I don't give a shit about any of this. I just want to see if they can put the idea in his brain. And but I found the relationship a little bit more thrilling in this one. I paid a little bit more attention to that, specifically like when she's standing on the other side of the hotel room and she's like, I'm going to jump off. And you're like, fuck, this is intense. So they did a really good job with that.
That was real intense.
Yeah. I told Tim, I was like, I think we were maybe halfway through. I said, I don't think Hans Zimmer stopped playing damn music. He's still going, bro. Like the music is just constant. It's constantly behind the acting, and it amplifies it in such an incredible way. And just that final sequence of they wake up and they're on the plane and the music's playing and Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Ellen Page kind of give them this look like, holy fuck, we did it.
Yeah.
Up until he meets Michael Caine in the airport. You're good cop. And they get off the plane and the lead, like all of that music just builds up so perfectly. And it's just one of those things that like you show film students this movie and say, like, there's some awesome shit in this that you can really learn from. This took him 8 years to write, right?
Mm-hmm. To get to the final version, because then he realized at some point the horror thing's not working. We have to make it a heist movie. But then he's like, the heist movie's not going to have enough emotional key beats to fit. So that's when they added the Mal stuff. To like kind of like make it all fit. I love the combination of the acting, the actors, the cast, the music, the story, and just how ambitious this entire thing is. And I feel that's where the exposition comes into play, because it has to for them to go as deep as they do. This movie starts with a dream within a dream. Like that to me was always the coolest thing. I remember in theaters like being mind blown by that. And this is now my fourth or fifth time watching it. I'm still like so impressed.
It still tricked me.
With how far they take it. And it's just like, and then they're going to deal with gravity and they're going to have to figure out, like, they have this team. They're assembling a team for a heist. Like, all the things I love about movies are kind of presented here. But there is that added level of, we got to do cooler stuff. It's dreams. We got to do cooler stuff. The only things that kind of let me down are, I don't feel there was ever an emotional moment that I, like, really connected with. Like, I feel like I'm supposed to be welling up towards the end, and I'm not at all. Which is fine, but I just feel like that was a missed opportunity, because there's something about their relationship that, even seeing them as old people, I was like, this isn't hitting me how it feels like they're trying to make me feel. And the other thing is the dream within a dream within a dream, the third level, when they're kind of just in a James Bond snow base.
Yeah.
I just felt like it is kind of out of place, and I get that they did it to like make it just a visual contrast to everything.
And super different, yeah.
Yeah, but for a movie about dreams, I was always let down. I still kind of am. That we didn't get any fucking crazy wacky shit in the levels of dreams.
Every day,
all three levels were kind of just like, okay, it's a hotel. It's a, you know, just like random streets. It's,
what's a big, why would everyone need to be naked? Why would that be a wacky shit for you?
Dreams, right?
It's true. Everyone's always naked, or you're always naked. Everyone else is
clothed. I'm always naked.
Absolutely, you are.
Isn't the idea that they're trying to trick the person? They're trying to either extract the information or incept the information into to like not know that it's a dream, otherwise the subconscious will attack all the external
dreamers. Not by the time we get to the third level, because on the second level they're like, it's a dream.
Yeah, but in the third level they're telling the guy that they're in his uncle's dream, stealing his uncle's.
Yeah, they're trying to trick him. But that's why I like that level, Kevin, though. That's why I like where he goes to the Bond level, because it's in his imagination what's happening there.
Yeah.
And so it gets crazier. And that's
it's built by the Cillian architect, Murphy. So Ellen Page, right?
That I don't know, because they keep taking the machine out, and I'm assuming that Ellen Page is building all of these. Mm-hmm. Because even the machine in the thing is not, you're not going in that person's mind. So I think she is the architect the whole time, right?
She is, yes. Yeah. But on that last corner, Ames, whatever, Bane gave her the idea of putting in the heating ducts the AC ducts.
Right, okay, so it's not Cillian Murphy's, it's hers. And then he goes like,
she's the architect on everything, yeah.
Yeah,
and he's why then, if this is the other, I have a few questions here.
I like this. This is one we're actually discussing. I enjoy it.
Yeah. Why then would anything from Leonardo DiCaprio's subconscious be able to infect any of the stuff? Like, are they in his head? Whose head are they in?
When they're all connected, their subconscious are all shared together. So certain things can leak through other things. So it was the train was Leonardo DiCaprio's subconscious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's the train that kills Mal. Right?
Yeah. Well, no, that's the train that kills
that killed them both.
Yeah, that woke them up
the first time.
Yeah.
Second question for you. How did they get out of limbo?
Because it was that they had both forgotten who they were. And so, like, to get out of limbo, you have to remember that you're in a dream and doing this thing. It's kind of like you got to come to the realization that you're in limbo again. And so when you're alone, there's no one there to piggyback off of and bounce those random errant ideas off of. Mm-hmm. But when Corn on the Cob sits down with Sato and they are like, hey, okay, hold on. He says one part, he says the other part. They start parodying back. They have that moment of realization of kind of figuring it out. It's very mm-hmm. much like Justice League, A Midsummer Nightmare, which reunited sure. the Justice League we all wanted back in the 90s mm-hmm. and how they were in a world without superpowers. And then sure, when they all started uniting, they remembered who they really were.
Right.
So going back to what I was saying about, like, there's a theory that this might be incepting into Leo's mind.
Yeah.
This is a good jump off point for that because it involves the old Saito bit and getting out of limbo and all that stuff. So a big key thing is like having the a fact go from layer to layer down in order for it to be consistent. So that's why the number is so consistent in going into is it Cillian Murphy or is it Killian Murphy?
Killian
Murphy's dreams.
Yeah. Somebody corrected me recently and I was
I always said Cillian.
Me too.
I always said the guy from 28 Days Later.
You learned something here. YouTube.com/kindoffunny. It's great. So the phrase, do you want to be an old man full of regrets waiting to die alone, is the number for Leonardo DiCaprio, where it comes back in through like with it links between those things. But it really is Mal incepting that idea into his mind because they do grow old. And that becomes his reality in those worlds. And then his actual totem is his wedding ring, which he, when you watch the movie, if you're looking for it, his wedding ring only appears in scenes where he's dreaming. Many times in the movie, the scene cuts away right before you see his hand, so you don't know.
Wow.
Cool shit. Mm. But it's just like, if that's a consistent thing that does line up in the movie following the rules that they presented.
I just love it. I think it's always just so damn, it just always blows my mind. I'm just always impressed by the amount of detail put into everything. And there was a moment sort of midway through where a character proposes a question and says, yeah, but what if this and this happens? And the other character says, well, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it's totally Nolan just being like, don't worry, I got that shit covered too. Like, I thought of everything, dude.
That's where I started getting a little bit bored because they always, like, they stop every 15 minutes to kind of reevaluate the rules and add more. And not the least of which was like the big one where, like, if you die in a dream, you wake up. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then midway through, like, oh, not this dream though.
You're too sedated. You're too deep.
You're too sedated because we use this sedating pill. So if you die in this dream, you go to limbo and someone has to go get you. And I was like, okay, well, we just redid the rules there. That's fine. No, nothing better than redoing your own rules about 45 minutes into the movie, but that's cool. It's all good.
Nah, but I don't agree with that because they, like, the whole point was the fact that Leo didn't tell them exactly what was happening, and that's why everybody gets all angry at him. Like, I
get that, but, like, to me, I'm like, there's moments where you can tell they wrote them, they were like, we need to up the stakes here, and one of those moments was, hey, if you die in a dream, like, I just there's some things that I wish they would have simplified a little bit, right? Yeah. I think the rules should have been laid out right in that first part where it's like, you die in a dream, you go and fucking stuck in limbo, you go crazy, so don't die in a dream. Like, this is fucking Nightmare on Elm Street, right? You die in the dream, you die in real life. That's cool. But in reality, like, because if, you know, in the first part, he shoots the guy in the head. He shoots, I think it's JGL in the head.
Yeah.
And he wakes up. Yeah. He's like, damn it, I woke up from a dream because I died. And then midway through, they're like, oh, no. We have to have this super pill or super serum that we give everyone that goes that deep into and keep them that asleep. I just think it was like, it just convolutes everything and gets a little bit in the way of the storytelling for me.
I do like with that, they had the explanation of like, oh, well, we didn't think he'd be, like, trained to fight us in this way. So to them, there was no risk of dying in the dreams, right? Because they thought they were just going to hit this dude and he was just going to have a...
Well, no, but he doesn't tell him that. He doesn't tell him that until they go into the dreams that it's dangerous for them to be
there. Yeah,
but
he doesn't know that he's got a militarized subconscious. Because in his mind,
it's not going to be dangerous.
Right, yeah. That's not what I'm arguing. What I'm arguing is that it's silly. And I'm like, just the rules at the beginning of it, everything should have been more simple. Like, make it really, really dangerous to go into dreams from the get-go. Because right off at the beginning, you're like, oh, they can just pop into these guys' dreams at all and there's no consequences. And then midway through the movie, there becomes consequences, where I feel like that kind of is to the detriment detriment of the overall like the overall like tension and the drama of the movie. I think it would have been cooler if they just laid everything out in the first like 20 minutes of the movie, like you normally would. The first act is, here are the rules of this world. You die in a dream, it's you're gonna go fucking crazy. So don't die in the dream because your brain doesn't know what's reality.
See, my thing is, I disagree because I did like it, and I because it was that I'm with you that in the first, you know, with the original rules laid out, you are kind of like, all right. Weird stakes, clearly Leonardo or Cobb's losing his mind or whatever here. And then when you get into that world and you feel like, oh man, there's all these security agents here. He's, you know, what we talked about in the very front of the movie of I can teach you to defend yourself. That's happened here to Scarecrow. And now we're having this conversation of, well, we're so deep and we've taken this super sedative, right, that the rules don't normally apply. And I, that was even on a rewatch of this in the moment last night of watching it, I had that of like twinging your chest, like, oh fuck, like, yeah, you know, this is serious. There is a different thing. He has trespassed here. He's crossed a line with them too. Right. And I really appreciated that Tom Hardy did exactly what I would have thought to do in that situation. Like, cool, I'm just going to sit here. Fuck you guys. I'm out. And he's like, well, no, everybody's going to get here. And it was this situation where, as you know, the bad guy, or not the bad guy, but the douchebag Cobb is, to bring them in without these telling them everything. I like that you can then see it collapsing around them and they have to come no matter what.
They could have done that without having to stop every 15 minutes and reevaluate and add new rules to everything, and then have these two side characters that are Ellen Page and Joseph Gordon-Levitt basically be there narrating the entire film for the audience. Like, I think there could have been a lot simpler ways to do this, because literally, I mean, there's a moment where he's like, okay, I'm in this bar with him and we're doing the Charlie bit or whatever it is. And then they have to stop and be like, well, here's what the Charlie bit is, everyone. This is where you tell the guy he's in a dream and it's very, very dangerous. Let's go back to the story. And they literally turn about and like watch him in the bar again.
It's written so much better than how you're like explaining. Because,
well, no, I mean, don't get me wrong. The dialogue is great, but it's every five minutes stopping.
The dialogue makes a lot of sense in that, like, there are people in this heist crew that are new to it. So it's like when they're using nomenclature.
No, it's Ellen Page is new.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, I feel like they do a good job of making the explanation like fun and kooky and being like, oh, sure, you know, he's got to go with Mr. Charles or whatever the name was.
Yeah.
And her being like, wait, what's that? And it's like, even though I've seen this movie before, like, I didn't remember exactly what that plan was going to be. So when like they're like, well, we did this, and like it didn't work, and it's I don't know. I like that the way they chose to do that.
Ellen Page iced tea.
I don't get it.
From
SBU, do it, Andy.
So you're telling me that these are all potential?
Oh yeah, okay.
They'll come after me. Like,
don't get me wrong. I mean, there's always a character like that in an adventure movie like that. That is a tried and true trope for a writer to put a brand new character in there because that's where the audience is, and you get to explain to the character instead of turning to the camera and be like, "Hey, Nick, you're sitting in the theater. You don't understand this." It's just normally you would sort of all of those things would be established by roughly the first act, and then we'd be on the ride for the rest of it. And it's just, this movie's so complex that they have to stop and explain that to you guys. And to me, when the first time I watched this, I was like, I'm enthralled by this. It could literally be Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Tom Hardy fucking a little picture-in-picture box being like, all right, let's stop for a second. Here's what we're doing now. Because the concepts are so fucking cool and the sci-fi is so cool. It's just the second time watching it, I'm like, all right, I feel like I'm studying for an exam right now and I just want to get this done so I can go on and enjoy my weekend, you know?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I disagree because, like I said earlier, like, I like this movie starts with a dream within a dream. It starts where it's like we're already going deeper than what this would be, could be, to make it a simpler experience for the audience. Like, I like that they had this whole team. They set up a world that I have so many questions about what we don't see in this movie. Mm-hmm. Of like, so obviously there are people out here doing this. And when we see when we go to the chemist and it's like there's this whole group of people that just go there every day to sleep and dream and stuff. It's like, this world exists. These aren't the only people to do this. We even see in the beginning of the movie, they have a different team member that betrays them. And it's like, I love that concept of this is not only a thing that exists for them, there's other teams that do this as well. Enough teams that the Cillian Murphy's character legitimately has security being put into his dreams to deal with it all. Mm-hmm. Like, that shit's so fucking cool. And that's why I do appreciate the rules kind of being able to adapt and change throughout it, because these guys are so pro that they are going further than we've ever done before. They're trying to incept a thing. And I love the lines of dialogue where they're talking about, we're going to do Inception And half the characters are saying, like, that's not possible. But then they get to Tom Hardy, and he's like, oh, no, it's possible. It's just hard. Like, all of this shit exists. Like, this could have been done before with other teams. They wouldn't know. I just love that there's it goes so yeah. deep. And this team is so good at being able to adapt. And that, to me, is what the rules can change, but they're able to adapt. And because yeah. they're so good at their job being their positions on their team.
One of my, I think one of my favorite parts in the movie, I mean, again, it's littered with them because there's just a lot of moments that have that sort of mind fuck, holy mind shit, fuck. I can't believe he thought of this too. But I absolutely love when they are in the hotel and convince Cillian Murphy that his uncle is trying to steal everything from him or whatever. And they get the uncle there and they're like, so what was happening before this? He was like, well, he was being tortured. Well, did you see him getting tortured?
Yeah, that's great.
And then Cillian Murphy's like, oh, shit. Oh, my God, they're getting me. And he's like, well, we gotta go in right now, Cillian. And it's so Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
It's so Tom Cruise and the mm-hmm. crew, like, you know, inside of, you know, pretending to be Wolf Blitzer or whatever the fuck. Like, right. I absolutely love shit like that. And then, like, you just know that as the audience, like, oh, we're in on this together. And we hope, holy shit, I hope that they're going to get Cillian Murphy in this dream and then trick him again. And it's just awesome, man.
Yeah, I do want to give a shout out to Tom Berenger coming back and be like, yeah, what's up? I just watched Major League like 2 weeks ago. And I was like, fucking love. I forgot Tom Berenger was in this movie. Also, yeah. I do want to give a shout out to Tom Hardy in this because I feel like Tom Hardy is so. This was like the first time I remember actually seeing Tom Hardy and being like, this guy's a really good fucking actor. And then you've seen him in so many different things since, but going back and watching him, he's so much more like suave and like debonair.
He's
so cool
in this.
And I love that moment where he goes, where JGL's trying to shoot the guy off the thing and he just can't get him.
He's like,
and then Tom Hardy walks up. He's like, you have to learn how to dream bigger, love. And just fucking shoots him with a grenade launcher.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I love how every one of his lines is so, you know, neatly delivered. He's
the coolest character.
Damn good actor. Yeah, he's awesome. MVP.
Are we already calling him the VMP MVP?
I'm gonna call him MVP.
Really? Wow. I'll give it.
I mean, there's so many.
This is a tricky one.
The MVP of this movie is undeniably Hans Zimmer. But next up, I'll give it to Tom Hardy, just because, like, cool. Yeah, what a fucking pleasure, man.
Yeah, I was gonna give it to Tom Hardy or Ellen Page because, you know, Ellen Page is sort of the one who thinks like, hey, we can go one deeper, and then you have to resuscitate him. You have to do the little like fucking heartbeat thing to wake up Cillian when we're here on the snow level. Like, that was all her doing. They're fucked right there. But then Tom Hardy's the one who like holds everybody off and fights a giant campaign level of GoldenEye.
Dude, I know. There's a moment when that scene starts. First off, everything they were in, that's dope. I love the snow camo where cool. Everything's white, including their guns.
The fact that there's a moment to this place is awesome.
I know,
too.
Fucking rad. So it automatic, like, that was the first, that scene when I saw it the second time, I was like, God, this looks like such a fucking, like, let Christopher Nolan direct a Bond movie, A. B, there's a moment where Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hardy, and JGL are talking to each other, and I'm like, any one of these guys could be James Bond. Done.
This level was based on James Bond on Her Majesty's
Secret Service. Yeah, level. That makes sense because it looks exactly like the, I mean, that whole movie is like up on the top of this of a mountain and in the Alps or whatever. Yeah, it's really cool.
The architecture, very brutalist. Like, I just got so many Control vibes from the rotating rooms and the weird architecture and things just not things. Like, I think what's brilliant about it is that it isn't. What I loved about it was it wasn't this crazy fantasy world. And I think that's what Tim wanted. Tim wanted like weird sort of dream shit. But I love that
Greg wanted that.
Greg wanted that.
To be clear about what I was saying is I'm not saying I necessarily wanted the last part to be that. I just wanted at some point to get some of that. Because the only time we ever get crazy animals. Stuff is when Leonardo DiCaprio is talking to Ellen Page and we see the flip. Otherwise, everything else is just normal unless something's going wrong. And it's like, even if just like for the hotel bit, if there was a bit more of that going on, I think that would be real cool. We get a little bit with the gravity stuff, but that's more due to what's going on a level above instead of it being a unique dream.
So, but I think that is based more on Christopher Nolan's commitment to sort of trying to do everything as practically as possible. And to me, I think that I respect the shit out of that. Like, he could have obviously they use CG in the moments where she's like bending the town back onto itself and some of the other elements. But I think he likes doing stuff as much stuff in lens as possible. And I remember reading articles about how they did those hallway scenes with like constructing the different trailer, hallways on gimbals and like, and moving them, like rotating them and shit. It's so fucking cool. And it really adds to the funness of that part where he's fighting the guy up the wall and you know, it's just cool.
I got a lot of facts about that stuff as well, quick, actually.
Lay the facts on.
I have one, like, question about that scene that I feel like it's weird that it's not explained, and I kind of feel like maybe it's broken a little bit. So when JGL is fighting in the hallway and things are rotating and they're falling because gravity is switching, right, because the car is spinning, yeah. Why are the people in the hotel not falling around that are in the bed in the hotel room next door? Wouldn't they also be falling off the bed and rolling around in the room being woken up?
Maybe, but they're also in a dream at this point, so maybe they don't experience it. Maybe they don't feel it.
No, but that's the thing.
Because they feel it, and they feel it in a different way in the other level, right? Where, like, shit, they get the avalanche and all that stuff.
Sure, but we know that their physical bodies, or at least,
yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, their faces would have hit. Their faces would have hit the ceiling of the hotel, right? Tumbled around the wall.
Maybe, but isn't it all based on your perception of whether or not you're aware of what's happening to you in the dream? Like, JGL's awake in that level. Everyone else is in the next level of consciousness, so they don't.
But we see their bodies floating later on. You know what I mean?
I guess you do see him floating in the actual van,
and like he has to trigger the elevator, which is brilliant to like fake gravity.
And I love that moment because we were as we were watching it, you know, and JGL's looking around. He's like, how do I simulate a kick? How do I simulate gravity? And then like it's so overly complicated, but awesome. Dude.
Yeah, because like, did you get
for a moment when you were watching him floating in space, did you ever think like they must have just shellacked his hair back so it didn't, you know, because that's always the thing that the tell when someone's not really floating in gravity is that the hair is not floating. So Andy, they just slicked his hair back.
Oh, yeah.
So good. Nolan in an interview, Nick actually was talking about that. Where he was just like, we made sure that we used as much product as possible and that the characters consistently through the movie had that so that it wasn't like out of place for this. And that's why Ellen Page's hair was put up in the bun.
Pulled back. Yeah.
Makes sense.
For that level. But wait, Kev, sorry. I don't remember the people in the room next door.
JGL is fighting in the hallway. He literally has just stolen the bombs from the floor underneath where the room is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's running around, and so that hallway is turning and spinning.
Yeah.
So the people in the room upstairs should also be experiencing
that. Do we
see
them, though?
No, we don't see them till later when there's no gravity and they're all just floating in the middle of the room.
JGL goes back into that room. They're all fucked up and all over the place.
But the way
one person's in the closet. What the fuck happened?
But they made it clear to say the way the sedative worked is it did not trigger the part of your brain that tells you you're off balance so that you'd still feel that sense of falling, right? That would still wake you up. So if they're bouncing around in that room, even if they're under this incredibly strong sedative, it should have woken them up. Yeah.
Use the kick, like an artificial kick.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Oh, no, a real kick, because suddenly the gravity of the room's.
Yeah, but I mean, like, artificial meaning, like, that one's supposed to be the real one.
Right.
Like,
oh, yes. Yeah.
The real kick was supposed to be something else. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the only, like, thing where, like, when we go and see them all floating, clearly their bodies were moving around. It's weird that they didn't wake up.
Yeah.
That's the only point in the movie where I was like, that's fucking weird.
Greg, can you call Christopher Nolan right now?
Sure. Okay. Oh, no, actually, I have my phone on.
Actually,
sorry.
Greg, can you DM Vin
but
Diesel?
But I just think it comes down to, I mean, to be serious about this, doesn't it just come down to what dream level you're conscious in? Or no, is that not it?
No, because like everyone gets kicked when the car hits the water, right?
Right. Well, no, they all get kicked simultaneously. They get kicked up through the other dreams. That's why there has to be a kick in every layer. It's not just the van that's kicking them. They needed to simultaneously kick out of each one of the levels to come back to reality.
Right. In the snow level, it was the detonations that he set.
Right.
In the elevator level, it's the elevator.
Yeah. And then the other one, the van, and the water in the van.
That's why. That's why I'm always confused.
If you missed one of
them,
you'd be stuck.
That's why I'm always confused. Is how they got out of limbo.
Now you're making some sense.
And that's the thing with remember, it's in the snow level when the snow falls, and they're like, was that it? Did we miss it? And he's like, yeah, we missed it, but we have one more shot when we hit the water.
Right.
Like, they need to have it all simultaneously. That's why they keep checking their watches.
Man, I would have fucked up the kick so bad.
Oh, my God, totally.
But, like, here's my question for the kick. Do you just decide to wake up with the kick?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, too. Or did they all just have to tip over at that point?
Right, when they kick him in the water, like when they're doing all of the tests where they kick him over in real life and he wakes up,
isn't that
what the kick is?
Yeah.
So like, doesn't someone need to kick him in real life to wake him up? I don't understand how the kick in a dream works versus the kick in reality. Because at one point he pushes him. We get that awesome Phantom Flex shot. Yeah, where it was the first time I ever remember hearing about the Phantom Flex, where he like gets and they have to use like 10,000 watts of light on his face or whatever.
Wait,
but he goes in the bathtub.
Phantom Flex.
It's the super slow motion camera that they use for those things. Yeah. But I'm confused. Like I thought the kick needed to happen in real life.
I thought
but
so
I
too.
Guess the kick needs to happen in the dream. I don't know. It's kind of confusing to me.
Like the kick is, I guess, a train, right? So you have to jump on the train to get taken out.
Wait, like, hold on. Does the kick have to happen in real life? When does
it
happen?
Because come back. I know what you're talking about. And yes, in the water when he gets kicked into the water, right?
To
But again, remember, that was in a dream.
Yeah, that was in real life.
Okay, so but the kick is you have to feel the feeling of falling, right? Like you do in a dream. The whole concept behind the kick was you're dreaming and you're falling. I feel it. And it wakes you up, right? That was what that's based off of, I think, is what he said. So, but that makes sense. So why wouldn't they immediately get kicked out the second the van started falling off
rolling
the
over.
Bridge?
Yeah.
Or rolling over. Anytime, like the second that van fell off the bridge, you would start feeling the feeling of falling. Does it have to wait until you almost hit the ground like you would in a dream?
No, I think it's
you have to be woken by a moment of impact, which is why their faces hit the elevator.
No, but the first kick was when
the van started going
off,
over,
right?
So which theoretically, I don't know if they show, but that would have woken the driver. Right?
I think Greg is right. Well,
I don't know. That would have woken the driver because he would have.
I think they get around it because I just don't remember them ever showing in the long fall him there.
I think
that's what wakes him, and then the water wakes them.
Right. I think Greg, what you said is correct in the sense that, like, I think you were the one that just said this. It's whatever level they're in, they have to
you have to be
aware
kicked in every
that the level above is kicking, right?
They have to be. You have to be kicked in the level you're in to get out of the level you're in. So I think, like,
so let's go all the way down. In Limbo, Ellen Page jumps, like, throws the guy off the building and jumps, right?
Yeah.
Then they go up to the other level with the snow. The tower blows up.
Explosion. Yeah.
And then I guess that's the fall, right?
Yeah.
And then above that is the elevator that pushes.
Yeah.
And then above
that
is
the van. The van that wakes them back
up
into the real world.
Yeah. And that's why it all has to be simultaneously set up.
Got it. So with that, the reason that when the van was like tumbling, that didn't wake them up because they weren't kicked in the layer below.
Correct.
That.
Yes. And they were
same,
one deeper.
That's the same reason.
That's why I'm saying the driver would get kicked.
We're in the hotel and they're like flying around in gravity in this room. That doesn't matter because that they're not being kicked below. Got
it. They're still in that dream state where time is going slower. Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
This shit is deep. I didn't give you my thoughts on this movie, but I enjoy the shit out of it. I think this might be the second time I've ever watched this movie, and I enjoyed it so much more the second time, where it's like the first time it's fun because it's a mystery where you're trying to understand fully what's happening. And it's funny because like I actually feel the same way about The Sixth Sense, where it's like when you watch it a second time, you can get so much more out of all of the pieces that go into it, you know? Where it's like suddenly now you're looking at it in its completion. Like you're looking at the big picture of it and you can have these sort of conversations. I can't believe how good of a creator Nolan is.
What would be your totem, Kevin?
Cecil. You know, that was my first response, but it's got to be something small.
They'd be like, how do you keep bringing this dog with you into the dreams? <It's> like,
What would be my probably a Leatherman.
A Leatherman. Yeah. You know where you could buy a Leatherman?
Oh.
You can save some money on your totem using honey. We all shop online and we've all seen the promo code field taunt us at checkout. It doesn't need to do that anymore. Thanks to honey, manually searching for coupon codes is a thing of the past. Honey is a free browser extension that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best one it finds to your cart. I've saved thousands of dollars using honey. So is Joey. So is Kind of Funny. So is Kevin. And soon he will be saving when he buys Leatherman to be his Inception totem. When you check out, the honey button drops down and all you have to do is click apply coupons, and it just does it. It just searches the internet, finds you the best coupons, and just saves you money. Honey has found over 17 million members, over $2 billion in savings. It's a lot of money saved. If you don't already have Honey, you're straight up missing out on free savings. It's super easy to install into your browser. You never need to think about it again. It just automatically works for you. It's literally free. It installs in a few seconds. By getting it, you're doing yourself a solid and supporting this show in review. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/morning. That's joinhoney.com/morning. Also, I want to give a shout out to Hello Fresh. You can get fresh, measured ingredients and mouthwatering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door with HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh lets you skip those trips to the grocery store and makes home cooking fun, easy, and affordable. Last night, Andy Cortez came over to watch Little Inception. Gia made some burgers. That burger, HelloFresh, baby. Over 90% of ingredients are sourced directly from growers to ensure the freshest recipes are delivered to your door. HelloFresh offers contactless delivery to your doorstep for easy home cooking with the family. Their pre-portioned ingredients mean there's less prep for you and less food waste. You can keep your fridge stocked by adding extra proteins or sides like garlic bread to your weekly order. Why wouldn't you want to do that? Garlic bread's fantastic. HelloFresh is committed to making fresh, delicious food available now more than ever, and has taken extra steps to keep its employees and customers safe. Let's see here. This is America's number one meal kit. You can go to HelloFresh.com/80morning and use code 80morning to get a total of $80 off, including free shipping on your first box. Additional restrictions apply. Please visit HelloFresh.com for more details. That is HelloFresh.com/80morning. as your code. And then finally, shout out to Hims. A common issue men face but don't always want to talk about is erectile dysfunction. 40% of men by age 40 struggle from not being able to get and maintain an erection. Guys turn to weird solutions or do nothing. You shouldn't do either of those things. They instead can turn to medicine and science. That's a much better option. You can check out Hims. You can discover the tiny pill worthy of a big celebration. 4hims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness for men. Andy and Nick have been using their hair loss prevention stuff for a very long time now. Isn't that right, Andy?
It sure is.
Sure is.
How easy
it sure
is it?
Right.
What's up? It's super easy. All you got to do is go online, answer a few questions, and if they think you're a good candidate for it, they will prescribe you the medication. I've been using the Finasteride, also the shampoo and the vitamins, and recently started using the conditioner, and I really like it a lot.
Ooh, stay conditioned, man. You can try Hims today by starting out with a free online visit. Go to 4hims.com/KFMS. That's FORHIMS.com/KFMS. 4hims.com/KFMS. Prescription products are subject to medical provider approval and require an online consultation with a medical provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. You can see the website for full details and safety information. This could cost hundreds if you went in person to the doctor's office or pharmacy. One more time, that's 4hims.com/KFMS.
Man, that vitamin is delicious. Eating it right now. That biotin vitamin.
I miss stealing getting back, from yours.
Yep. Getting back here to a little bit of some facts here. Obviously, this movie won a lot of awards. All right. It won 4 Academy Awards, including Best Cinematography, Best Sound Editing, Best Sound Mixing, and Best Visual Effects, and was nominated for 4 more: Best Picture, Best Original Screenplay, Best Art Direction, and Best Original Score. It was the 3rd most pirated film of 2010 with 9.72 million downloads.
Oh my God.
Avatar at 16.58 million, and Kick-Ass at 11.4.
It's interesting. It's interesting that he won Best Sound Mixing, because I always feel like his sound is so like a little too dynamic. Like, I remember watching Interstellar, and I'll be interested to see how you guys react to this. I'm sure you guys have way better sound setups than I do, but like, the louds in Nolan's film are so fucking loud compared to where the dialogue is like I was riding it over and over again. Like, I don't mind it when you're sitting in theaters because you get shocked and it's awesome.
One question, man, for you, it's though. Tough. Are you watching this on Amazon? Mm-mm. Okay.
Now this one, I think I watched this one on, I want to say I watched this on Netflix. No. I can't remember
which one. It's on Amazon Prime Video, and Amazon Prime Video's
audio. Well, Amazon's notorious for terrible compression.
Utterly goddamn trash.
Yeah, I just remember this one and specifically Interstellar when I watched it in theaters. But granted, I watched it in IMAX, but man, it was loud.
I feel like the Nolan loud trend started with Interstellar. I feel like that was the movie that started where the louds are. And there's the music is just pumping, and there's action moments, and people are like McConaughey's yelling and trying to get his voice heard behind this crazy Hans Zimmer mix or whatever.
I always thought that's what I remember. We watched Interstellar together, right? And I'm in the IMAX theater.
Who are you asking that question?
All of you.
I think I saw it with my wife.
I saw it with Fran.
Yeah. I sat in like the very back row, and I remember.
Well, but on a different time.
How many times did Fran saw it?
I don't know when I fucking saw it.
I don't believe that you saw it. I mean, Fran.
Well, one thing I love about this movie is that I got super hooked on really minimalist art, and there was always really good minimalist art on Tumblr back in the day, where they would make people would make really cool charts of where everybody was in the dream, but done in a really cool art style. So they would show like, you know, these are all the colored circles for each character, and this is where Cobb goes, this is where he died, this is where he ends up, here's JGL, this is where he was the whole time, this is where he pops up, this is where his kicks were affected. Because I'm looking at really terribly done graphics and charts or whatever, where everybody was and where they died and where they got kicked from and to. But these are all done really bad, but it just reminds you of really cool minimalist art posters that people were making back in the day. But it shows here that, like, so Saito died in the snowfield. He ends up in limbo. Cobb dies in the fourth level, ends up in limbo, but he's a lot younger because Saito died at such an earlier dream that the time just sort of, was super dilated or whatever. It's just cool, man. It's just so crazy concepts.
So talking about some of the sound stuff that Nick's referencing, I thought the mix on this one was actually really good.
Did you?
Like, especially with the music.
I'm watching it on just my TV speakers. So, it's probably not mixed for that. I mean, it's Christopher Nolan, so I'm sure he's like, you should have the best fucking sound system ever. But yeah.
And that experience was fantastic. But I love how much music is actually in this whole thing. A fact that, like, I was telling Andy last night, and this is like common knowledge for, you know, people that grew up watching this movie and seeing Tumblr and all that shit. But the song that keeps playing, the French song. Yeah.
That one?
Exactly.
Nailed it.
The blom, blom. Yeah. It's that song slowed down.
Oh. Which is really cool.
So that's how they're feeling it and hearing it in the you guys didn't know that? That's awesome. I was kind of embarrassed to bring that fact up because I was like, this is such a fucking, like, did you know?
Basic bitch inception fact.
Yeah. And hold on, there was one other thing I want to go there. Oh, a random fact that I just found out now. You know the song that the In Review intro does?
Yeah.
For this? That's not Hans Zimmer. That song's called Mind Heist, and that's not Hans Zimmer. That's some dude named Zach Hemsey.
That's cool shit.
Wow. Yeah.
Mind Heist. That's where
Mind Heist is a sick ass fucking name.
I remember a part of the score in this. I forgot what I told you. It reminded me of. Oh, it reminded me of Fallout, Mission Impossible Fallout, when the when they're leading up Nick to the big sort of heist at the end of Fallout, and it's
yes.
And there was a part in this movie that reminded me exactly of that with the music, where the music's just kind of building. Oh, you know what? It's JGL shooting or Tom Hardy shooting the grenade launcher at the dude. But and so much of this movie is amplified by the score. And at the end of it, you don't feel like you're about to have a heart attack, because I do every time.
No, from hype, yes. Like, it just all comes together so well. And like the music just builds and builds and builds. Like, I don't think there's ever been a movie that felt like it was building for 10 minutes. So well paced. And then when it ends and they're all just looking at each other on the plane, I feel like we did something, man. We high fives for everyone, guys. We accomplished some shit. But it's more like when that was all mixed in with kind of the more M. Night Shyamalan-esque reveal of him moving on from Mal and their kind of relationship, and the reveal that, like, they did live a whole life together and all that stuff. Like, I felt that was being presented in a way that's, like, supposed to be a bit more, like, lovey-dovey and, like hit you in your pull your heartstrings. And it didn't for me. It felt more factual.
I felt that moment me hard. Too, yeah,
good. Yeah, see, I'm kind of the opposite with the on some of these with you, Tim. Like, I think that the intrigue and the world building and a lot of how he sets the stuff up is the most interesting aspect. I feel like the action for me doesn't really like, and unfortunately the action sequences in a lot of Nolan films don't do a lot for me, just because I don't particularly love how he directs and shoots action. And that's not to be mistaken, but I love the look of this film. I think the cinematography is gorgeous, but I think the editing and some of the way the shots are sort of composed don't contribute very well to the overall action.
Nick, and like, be honest. Be honest, Nick. You just didn't like how JGL strangled that guy and pulled an MMA move on him when they were floating, and
that
he
was
like
a good move. He got it.
He just got a rear naked on him.
I saw that move, and I was like, it doesn't look real.
I don't remember. I have to go back and look at it. I don't remember it specifically. I just know they did strangle him. but like, this was a critique that I had of a lot of the Batman stuff and the Dark Knight stuff. Because I just don't. I think he's so good at writing stories and directing the actors and building the worlds. But there's just, from the nuts and bolts standpoint, there's so many shots in this movie where I'm like, that was a weird cutaway. Like, we never really feel the impact of bullets, which I'm sure he does on purpose because I don't think he cares so much about that. But when you contrast the action in this and you bring in like Mission Impossible Fallout, dude, I mean, it's not the difference between how the action sequences in those two movies are directed is fucking night and day, night and day. And it just works so much better in Fallout, because Fallout, I think, for me, the pacing gets broken up in this by a lot of the exposition, and we don't actually get to feel the full effect of the tension that's been built and then released. But in Fallout, like, dude, when he's hanging off the fucking side of that thing, you feel that shit. But again, this movie's not about the action per se. It's about building that and really being and kind of fucking with the audience the entire time and the sci-fi behind it. So in that, I think he very much achieves it.
There is a line that sort of shows that all of this just was a dream, where Maul is talking to Leonardo DiCaprio and she's like, they're at the end.
Where she talks about all this. She's like, supervillains and corporations hunting you down, that you don't think that's in your brain.
Yeah, giant corporations and like this crazy espionage. Like, come on, this isn't you, man.
That's not real.
I love that, because it really does sort of frame it in a way of like, oh shit, like, fuck, I really don't want this to just be a dream. But it just seems like she's kind of pointing him in the way of like, dude, quit playing make-believe, quit playing action hero, dude. You don't wield silenced weapons and shit like that. Come on, dude. Like, I love that.
By the way, shout out to silenced weapons.
Silenced weapons. Especially early in the movie.
There's a scene where JGL is, I think it was JGL, actually it might have been, someone is running around and shoots a couple people in like the back and then catches
the
body.
DiCaprio.
Oh, it's DiCaprio. So good.
Yeah.
Damn, it's
and
so
again,
good.
When he has that science weapon, I thought he could be Bond. Just like Nick thought. Yeah. He's walking around in Saito, first dream, it's just so cool, dude.
And I have the criticisms of how some of this stuff shot, but the environments and how they do a lot of this stuff practically, like the moment where he looks up and the water starts spilling in is so... It's cool. It could have been a lot like crazier. They could have, I think, augmented it a lot more with like CG and shit, but I don't think they needed to. It was just fucking rad to see it happen.
So with that, just like Christopher Nolan's previous movie, The Dark Knight, no second unit team was hired for making the movie. Every single shot was filmed by Nolan and
Wally Pfister. Yeah, I feel like a second unit action director may have helped a little bit with some of the stuff, because a lot of the, like, you know, people, obviously there's all those memes going around about like the horrible fight choreography in Dark Knight where there's guys just with guns, and I'm like, I don't know if Christopher Nolan knows what a gun is supposed to be used for, because most of the time the guys with guns just try to hit people over the head with them over and over again in all of his movies. Granted, it makes for interesting choreography. I just don't think it works that well. But like, we see that a couple times in this, where like, in specifically in the Tom Hardy moments, where some of it works and some of it you're just like, when those guys just fuck, like, they're fucking 20 feet away from him. Just shoot him with the fucking gun in your hand, don't run at him. I don't know.
But they're dumb projections.
Wait, guys, I have another.
They're NPCs.
They're NPCs. They're just standing on the wall, monitoring the wall.
This fact about the shooting and the effects and stuff. In spite of this movie's extensive surreal effects sequences, the majority of visual effects throughout this movie, such as the Penrose stairs, rotating hallway, mountain avalanche, and zero gravity sequences, were created through practical methods, not through the use of computer graphics imagery. The movie only has around 500 visual effects shots, as opposed to most other visual effects epics, which have usually upwards between 2,000 and 3,000 shots.
Yeah. And it works. It's fun. It's cool to see him do that. And again, I think that certain times it could have been ramped up a little bit more, but you don't necessarily need it, you know?
I have another question about the kick, specifically with this first sequence that we see where he gets tossed into the tub, right? That's why we see all that water rushing in.
Mm-hmm. Well, beautiful shot.
Beautiful shot. But I feel like, doesn't that contradict what we said? Because now he's going from the top level, right, and getting woken up.
You mean when
the other way around, right?
Well, no, the kick. I think the kick in the bottom level will be the water hitting him, and then he gets kicked back up through the thing. I don't know.
Wait, where are you talking about this one?
Where the very beginning, the where when Lucas Haas kicks him into the bathtub,
right?
And then it cuts to him in the cool Japanese inspired like mansion, and the water starts pouring in through the windows,
right?
And then he wakes up.
Yeah. What's the problem with that?
That kicks him up through. Well, they were what Kevin was saying that the
that kicks him back. That kicks him to the bathtub. That it is a dream. He's in the Japanese room, dream one. Then he's in the dream in the bathtub, dream two. Then they're in the real world, which is the train.
But
train.
But what? I'm lost on what's.
All I know is Lucas
Haas. The number of the levels is what's complicating this. Of the 1, 2, 3, like it was just said backward. But yeah, Kev, like,
what, I mean, I'm just counting levels, but sure. Okay, fine. Then he's in dream two, which is the Japanese room. Dream one, which is the whatever bathtub room with the people outside that are angry. And then real world.
But weren't we saying earlier that he has to get kicked from the lower dreams up, right? So
you get
that's what's happening.
You get kicked from the one above that you're dreaming.
Yeah.
You have to wake up from the dream.
He has to get kicked in dream one to get out of dream two. And then he has to get kicked in the real world to get out of dream one.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Okay.
Right? Because you're always waking up from the dream. So it has to be the one level above that kick's happening. But the deeper you are, the kick goes down.
Yeah. I'm looking at this sort of explain chart, and it's talking about what things are and how they're affected, whether it's a basic dream within a dream or an elaborate multi-level dream. And the elaborate multi-level dreams require synchronized kicks, one from the level of the dream and the other one from a level up timed using music. The standard basic dream within a dream, which is what we saw right here with it just says a simple single kick works.
Okay.
And by the way, like I have such a bad memory with these movies, but I forgot that they were in a dream within the dream. So I'm watching this, I'm like, why are they in some war-torn country?
Yeah.
And like, what the fuck is happening? This is so confusing. This makes zero sense. And then they wake up on the damn train. Or no, the carpet reveal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I love
that. I know he's going to rub his face on it.
I love that. Like, wow,
that's such a cool
fucking moment, dude. That's such a cool moment of him being like, this is polyester. This is a whatever. And him being like, are you like, why are you getting mad at me? I didn't fucking know he was going to rub his face on it. It's so awesome, dude.
I love that actor too. I forgot what he's Greg. What is he from? Lucas
Haas. He was in Dark Knight as well.
Yeah, but he was a child actor.
Oh. Let's open Lucas Haas's IMDb here. I'll let you know some things. Seems like he was known for Mars Attack, The Witness,
Mars Attack,
Brick.
The Witness, I think,
Brick?
Is what I'm
thinking. I remember Brick being
Brick. Oh, that's right. He was that weird bad guy in Brick. You guys should watch Brick.
He was the main kid in Mars Attacks. And by the way, can we just like, you know, I know Ellen Page just got hired and she's sucking up to her boss. But when they're in his level, in Maul's level, and she's like, this is beautiful. It's like, dude, it looks like a Minecraft server you haven't touched in years, dude. Like, she was like, this is incredible. You built all that. It's just like shitty copy pasted skyscrapers left and right. And like, you know, they're walking in a waterway that makes no sense. It just looks like you just copy pasted shit, dude.
Like you just created the dopest James Bond level of all time, and you're impressed with this shit?
Yeah, like, Ellen Page, like, yeah, exactly. You had a sky fold in on itself. Like, this guy didn't do shit, man.
I do love the visual though. The first time they go to it, and it's the crumbling city, like just walls are crumbling off.
Yeah,
I thought that's a cool
neglected.
Visual. It reminds me of a movie that I don't love the movie itself, but I love the visuals of the movie. A movie called Dark City. You guys ever see that?
Oh, I remember that.
That inspired this.
Did it? Yeah,
Matrix and Dark City inspired this movie actually like getting made.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, because there's a lot of visual cues I think from that, and I think Dark City was a remake of a different film. But anyway, very very cool visually. Weird fucking movie though. Weird movie.
Some cool facts for you. Both Brad Pitt and Will Smith were offered the role of Cobb.
Aha!
That would have been cool. That would have been really cool.
It could have been real fun.
They could have both done that, yeah.
And James Franco was supposed to be Arthur, but then the movie got pushed back production-wise, so the scheduling didn't work out, so we got JGL instead. Which
and then he fell in love with him. He fell in love with JGL.
And for good reason.
Yeah. Man, they're so great in this movie.
Greg,
they're so great in this movie.
When are we going to get the fourth Batman movie with JGL as Batman? When's it going to happen, buddy?
Never.
God damn it.
You know what I mean?
Damn it.
Could have been cool.
I just want to watch Tenet. I'm really sad about Tenet. Like, I just want my mind to be blown again. I want to be sitting there in a theater just alone, right? Maybe four people around me, and I'm not eating snacks. You can't eat snacks in these theaters anymore, Nick. It's really, really sad.
I'm going to eat fucking snacks.
Huh?
Can't even go to the theater anymore.
That's problem number one. I mean, like, you can't go to the theaters. Problem number two, bigger problem. Once inside, you can't eat snacks.
In certain theaters that have been reopened, they're like, they have the little graphic of the, I don't even know what mascot it is, but like, don't eat, no food eating, no eating snacks. Like, that's fucking sucks. Is it the Cinemark Tiger? I forgot what happened to the Cinemark Tiger.
Oh, God. So my question is back to the very beginning. I had Kevin sound. I thought it was very clear, but where does everybody come down? Do you think that he's back in reality? Do you think Mal was right? Where are we at that? I'm going to start with Andy Cortez.
I do not think it was a dream. I think that the top starts to topple. Yeah. The top starts to topple towards the very, very end. Nick, and I, again, yes, his kids do look the same, but still.
The first time I watched this, I was like, oh, this top started to topple. He's back. But the second time watching it more critically, it's 100% a dream. The kids are exactly the same. It's the same shot he keeps coming back to. It's the shot that he will not physically and emotionally allow himself to move on from because of the regret he feels for all the stuff with his wife. And finally, after all this stuff, I think it's all happening within a dream. I think he's still stuck in it. And I think he just chooses to move on and live the rest of his life in whatever reality he's in whatever dream state he's in.
Tim Geddes?
Up until this viewing and looking at theories and stuff, I totally would have said reality because the top starts to topple. And like, just it's so consistent until it's not. So it's like, it's going to fall. But now looking up theories and stuff, especially considering Michael Caine's character, The Ring. And there's just like, there's so much shit, but like Michael Caine's character is in this movie for like 3 minutes. And it's like, it's kind of implied that he's the inventor of all this shit. And he's also Cobb's grandpa. And it's like, there's so much shit, and there's lines of dialogue he has about like, you got to come back to reality, that like back up the whole thing that the Inception's actually on Leo's character and not other people. And the fact that Michael Caine's never in dreams throughout the movie. So it's like, that kind of backs up at the end that it is reality because Michael Caine's actually there. But I think this shit goes deeper. So I'm going to say dream.
How about
he reminds me of like Fallon. He reminds me of Fallon in this movie, Michael Caine, where it's like you kind of forget that he is an integral part of this movie, and then he pops up at the end. It's like, wait, you flew to America to pick up
your... That was the one thing that I was gonna point out, and that's one of the reasons why I think it is a dream, because he just sort of manifests him in America. And it's never, obviously, it can be very easily explained as being like, hey, you're going to visit your grandkids in America, and you took a different flight there. But he just meets him at the airport and is like, hey, here we are. You figured it out. You did it, right? And he's like, yeah, I did it. And let's go back to that dream state, that same image ending. You keep coming back to. And it's now a happy ending. And you get to go out to your children who never age. And I'm here for you. And by the way, it was an international flight. You took first class. You probably could have gotten here faster than me, but let's go.
Well, remember, he's coming from somewhere else. Michael Caine's coming from France. They're coming from Sydney, just to be clear.
And okay, they've also made that there's also sort of they say to look at his face when he finally brings Cobb home and his kids, you know, he goes to say hi to the kids. Michael Caine walks out and he kind of just kind of flashes a smile like, all right, like my job is done, but I don't like it's supposed to hint as if like, yes, this was actually a dream. And Michael Caine's just there like, hey, now he's happy. Let him do what he wants to do with these kids.
Right.
On top of what I thought was interesting, again, second viewing of this and having an idea where we were, knowing where we were going this time, and obviously years of discussion about the movie, I thought it was interesting in Leo and Mal's scene of when she's gone off her, she's like, I'm going to kill myself. And she steps to the side and jumps. And this is just Nolan obviously wanting to play with expectations and give you something to discuss, I think. The way she jumps, and they show it twice, and the way he pans down but never shows the street, it gave a dreamlike feel of that thing where she's falling, but we never see an impact. Not that I need to see a body or something, but even that, it's like the panning they do makes it seem like the building is just infinitely tall. And I'm sure
they definitely cut away, and they cut away from it so that you don't ever really see her and never really know for sure. And I think it adds to the sort of like, you know, ambiguity in the dreamlike state of the whole thing for sure.
But the only reason I don't like that is because it takes away the cool, crazy intrigue of the reveal of the reason I know about Inception is because I did it. The reason I know it can work is because I did it on her, and I tried to get her out of this shit, and it just didn't work on her.
But
and
that
dream manifested, and that dream or that idea festered like a, you know, what did he say, like a parasite or for,
yeah, I can't get rid of it. But that all backs up to the fact that if he was still stuck in it, he would still think that, right? This whole thing, if it's all in his brain, of course he would think it worked first because he wants to, his subconscious is working against him to keep him in this dream state so he never has to face the reality of whatever the fuck's going on in the real world, which is how I was sort of interpreted that.
I always thought that because it tumbles at the end, and other than that, the top always like seems to just spin perfectly. I always thought that was like, oh, it's very clear. Like, it's meant to show that it is, in fact, falling. But to Tim, you brought up the fact that Nolan was like, no, it was shot to look like it was not tumbling, or, you know, that it was going. Like, I feel like that and the kids being the same age, although we don't know how much time has passed, and his perception of time obviously seems a lot longer. In his mind, he hasn't seen his kids for possibly, you know, 80 years, right? Because he was stuck for at least 50 years in the limbo. So it could be that he's been gone for a month, and we don't know.
That's true.
But
and there's also things that the movie shows. This is another theory about trying to decide, is it reality or is it not? And like, what's most interesting is the theories that I saw that the, or at least the theorists that I found on YouTube that I vibed with the most were the ones that presented it that there's equal evidence both ways, and that it was designed that way. And everything Nolan's saying is that is the truth, that there isn't an answer to this. It's kind of ambiguous for a reason and enough evidence to back shit up. But one of the things is there's shots we see in this movie that what perspective is that even from? Of like, we know that they grew old together in those, in limbo, right? Mm-hmm. But throughout the whole, we only get one shot of them as old people. The rest of the time, we just see them in the exact same place as young people. What is that? And so there's an idea of like every time he's seeing the kids and stuff, like, did that memory even really happen? Like, at what point is like, is it based on reality? Are those even the real kids, like, for age wise and stuff? Or is he like kind of changing things in his mind? Or is what they're showing the audience not actually what he's even seeing?
Are they projections?
Well, the idea with them being old, that reveal, it was like that they had grown old. Like every time,
similar to how Saito grew old.
Wait, I'm sorry. What?
Similar to how Saito grew old.
Right. They had grown old, and like we hadn't ever seen that. But it is interesting because like now it brings up to like how much time did he spend with his wife every dream that he would have? You know where?
Well, this was just because they slipped into limbo, and that's why they spent.
But I'm saying Ellen Page caught him. Connecting to the machine, and it's like, I wonder how many times and how much time he had spent with his wife there, you know. It's really interesting. I like now with the idea that the top isn't supposed to be shown falling, I like the idea that like this is all a dream, and that his wife isn't infecting him because it's guilt. She's in there connecting to him, trying to pull him out of, you know, this limbo that they're stuck together. It's not supposed
to be. Yeah, but I think you hear it. You hear the sound of like.
Yeah, but I think the wobble was just different. More of a because he shot it practically and
that's,
not because it was CG.
So
I think if it was going to CG, it would have just kept going.
You can put like a magnet underneath. Like you can set up a magnet in a way it'll keep it like going for a long time. That's such a dumb thing for him to show it wobble and then go on an interview being like, the way I intended to shoot the shot was this way. It's like, you should have shot it that way then. It should have.
He didn't say that.
Wait, who said that?
The script says that. He didn't say that.
Got it. I mean, like, to me, that's as clear. If the script says it
could have looked.
Scripts to movies change all the time.
The top could have just looked like it did when Mal spins the top in the little safe, and it is just infinitely perfectly vertical.
Yeah, it never moves. Yeah,
it could have just looked like that. They could have easily done that. But you're hearing it, and there's like a there's a sort of staccato.
But even still,
pattern.
It spins. perfectly for a long time before it gets that little wobble. And it isn't even like the dramatic. I mean, I know how it begins with the top and then it'll start to go, but like
tops are crazy.
I think it's tops are crazy. Can you imagine being successful enough and popular enough one day that we could now make that a shirt? Tops are crazy, and it's tops just a
crazy
top,
these
top,
days.
It's a yeah. top.
There's
Michael
other evidence about it. Doesn't matter if it stops spinning or not because first off, it's not his totem. Oh no, just like to more evidence is that it's not his totem and he walked away from it totally. So yeah, it's he, like, well, if, even came, if it were to stop
that's
spinning
the whole
or
point
whatever.
That, sorry, I'm gonna
go for it.
Be in the same room. This is what I'm talking about, right? Like, legitimately, the top doesn't matter. And it's why the ending's so brilliant is that it's meant to be a conversation like this with your friends where you go back and argue what your point is. But yeah, 100%, it's him spinning it and walking away. And it's, again, everything you've seen throughout this entire movie. That's him, for the first time, just accepting this is reality and being done with it. It's the same way of when we're in the basically the opium den with all the old people that go there and live 40 years at a time, right? And the guy, for you know, the old man who's like running it, I forget exactly what he says, but he, rather than talk to anybody else in the room, he talks to Leonardo DiCaprio and he's like, what's it matter if it's real or not real? It's the reality they've chosen. This is what they've chosen it to be. And again, that's what this whole thing is.
They are escaping reality to go to their dreams. Like, this is their new reality. Who are you to say?
The reality isn't the reality anymore. The dream is the reality to them. And, like, they've just inversed what they all mean to them. And I think, again, I personally, my interpretation is that he is still in the dream. He doesn't care or want to know anymore. He spins top, walks away from it, accepts this is reality. And I do think that one level up, possibly more, but at least one level up, is Maul, who is sitting there with him, his body laying on the ground, knocked out still, and be like, fucking wake up, and like, you know, how do you get him out
of it? Do you think she's constantly like connecting and going into the dream with him, and like she's actually popping into his dream? Like, that is Ma trying to fuck up his. So you think he is?
Like, I wish. I think that'd be awesome, but I think that there. I think the messaging would change. Of like, listen, no, I keep coming back. I am real. I'm up there. Like, it wouldn't be the same.
Wasn't that the point of her like jumping off the like when she kills herself? Like,
I think that's her killing herself in the right timeline. I think that's still the first time. That's the real Mal. That's the straight through story of her. And then she leaves the dream. And I don't know. Can you come back into a dream if you didn't drop at the same time? I don't think so, right? It seems like they're all attached.
I don't see why not, because Ellen Page joins his dream mid-dream.
You're right. That's a good point.
So here's my question. So if he's
But now his dream wasn't real necessarily. Go ahead.
Right. If he's still in the dream, though, where is his physical body in reality?
I think it's on the floor. Now, granted, we get into this weird thing of how much time's passed and how the time moves differently. But I think that it's where they wake up on their living room floor, right? And like, it's the scene we saw multiple times of her waking up and crying and him hugging her and him being like, I implanted the idea, and even when we came out, it was still fucked up. I think that's where they dropped initially. And so I think she wakes up there and he hasn't woken up yet.
So like, can't she just turn the machine off?
Well, no, because the machine just connects you to his dream.
So he's in like a coma, thing, right?
Exactly. They slap his face.
It's not necessarily a coma. It could only be that like all of this giant timeline happens in a fraction of a second in the like top level world, because in the like he's now in limbo, so a million years can pass.
And it's only an hour up there.
Yeah. Whatever.
What's up, Tim?
Quartermaster 47 in the chat just dropped some bombs here. If you watch the end credits, you'll notice in the cast list there are two James and two Philippas with different ages 2 years apart.
Mm.
So those are older kids at the end.
While we were talking, I didn't want to say because it hurts my point, but that they aren't dressed exactly the same. There are minor differences in their outfits.
Oh, well, really?
You guys are all idiots. I hate you.
It's real. It's real. It's reality.
What I do want to toss out too right now, and this has nothing to do with this, but it's just interesting for life. You know, in cartoons where like people put pies out to cool and like that smell weapon?
Yeah.
That's happening in real life here, because Jen's making a cobbler and I started doing this a second ago. Very concerned where this pie smell is coming from. I am stoked to finish this
show. That sounds delicious.
All right, to move on, there's two more facts I want to say because they're kind of fun. In an interview with Entertainment Weekly, writer, producer, director Christopher Nolan explained that he based the roles of the Inception team similar to roles that are used in filmmaking. Cobb's the director, Arthur's the producer, Ariadne's the production designer, Ames is the actor, Saito is the studio, and Fisher's the audience. In trying to write a team-based creative process, I wrote the one that I know. That's cool. This is just one of those super lame things, but Nolan's just like, I don't care. It's fun. It doesn't need to be that great. If you take the first letters of the main characters' names, Dom, Robert, Eames, Arthur, Mal, and Saito, they spell dreams. If you add Peter, Ariadne, and Yusuf, the whole makes dreams pay, which is what they do for a mind thief. Also, Ariadne is named that because it's a Greek name, and she's some Greek character that helped some other Greek character get out of a maze.
Did you all think that Mal was like a sexy spider?
Oh God. How did this not come up?
Wait, what?
Scary.
When Mal,
if you watched It, but like the clown was sexy? Is that what you're saying?
Like, yeah, like maybe she was like the physical manifestation of a sexy spider. So like Kevin, when Ariadne goes down to Cobb's dream and she goes down the elevator and she walks in and Mal looks at her, she's like, "What are you doing here?" And she's like, "Oh, I'm so and so." She's like, "I know who you are. Why are you here?" Doesn't she not evoke the vibe of a sexy spider?
What the fuck is wrong with you? Are we getting a plot or what?
Last week we had the reveal that Joey thinks that the dad from Totoro is hot. Gia may or may not have said inappropriate things about Halloween costumes. But this week, yeah, Andy out of nowhere just goes, "Does anyone else think she looks like a sexy spider?"
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, and then, "What?" And then he goes, "Wouldn't she make a great Charlotte from Charlotte's Web?"
Nice.
Which implies that Andy thinks that Charlotte is a sexy spider.
Wait, hold on a second. From Charlotte's Web is a sexy spider, right?
No.
Come on.
So at the end, at the end where Cillian Murphy is about to get into the safe, which we haven't talked about the safe yet. It's really, really cool. And then Mal drops behind him and they're like, "There's somebody else in there with you, Cillian." And it's Mal. I was like, she came down from a spider web. Right. Think about that.
She did
the safe, by the way. I love the manifestation of this fake sort of safe room and the hospital that he sees his dad in as dying.
Cool.
And it's so video gamey where it's like the you know, all of this just looks like a VR room. But the really nice wood finishing is behind him as he's there dying in his bed. And all that moment is just like, I think, so perfect, especially from the perspective of Tom Hardy, where he's sitting there just hoping to God that this thing takes. He's waiting to blow this bomb, and then he sees like the little top in the safe, and he starts crying. And Tom Hardy's like, "Fuck yeah, it worked!" Like, it's so good, dude. All of the end of this just works so perfectly.
Yeah, I like the production design behind that room because it reminds me of a holodeck from Star Trek: The Next Generation, where everything's like gridded. And so shout out to Pete Postlewaite, who's an awesome actor. And I said wait, I think this is how you say the last syllables of last name. But I remember him being so fucking awesome in The Usual Suspects, you know, where he plays the lawyer and he's just like, "You can kill me if you want, but Mr. Soze will never stop." And you're like, fuck, he's never going to stop, Andy. Nobody knows who Mr. Soze is.
I knew him from from the Romeo and Juliet with Leonardo DiCaprio.
I forget who he played in that, but
I forgot who he played, but I just remember I remember hearing that name, and then when he passed away, I was like, oh shit, this guy was kind of like in a lot of stuff throughout his life.
Tim, you tell me that's not a sexy spider right there.
Yeah,
as far as spider goes, like,
she gave off mom vibes, man. Charlotte was all and about what? The mom You're, vibe.
Are you telling me right now that like people don't think moms are super hot and it's a whole porn?
I mean,
like,
Greg,
I've definitely seen the Pornhub stats at the end of the year. I know people think moms are hot. I'm just saying this particular mom, Charlotte from Charlotte's Web, ain't doing it for me.
Andy, all I'm saying is I'm seeing this mom. Movie in a different way.
Sexy spider. Just think about it.
Who's Templeton fucking? Does Templeton? He gets a fuck. He gets a woman at the end, right?
Andy. Please hit me with some
seven syllables in the middle. You'll need five for the first and last line. If you're not poetic, no need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku in review. Haiku in review.
You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to write your review in haiku form, just like Cass the Incredible Kolk did. Tried to create a haiku within a haiku. Got stuck in limbo. Awesome Ethan says, just pay attention. First act explains all the rules. Come on. It's not hard. Then I don't get this one, so I'm going to need some help from you guys. City of Legend says, this shit's hella deep. Call this movie Cauldron because life is a dream.
No idea.
It seems like a reference.
I guess a cauldron is deep.
I don't think they are.
You know what? It's not that deep. Now that I'm syllabling it out, It's not Cauldron. It must be Calderon.
Calderon. What does that mean?
Calderon? Calderon?
Maybe.
That sounds like a last name.
Yeah.
D-A-L-D-E-R-O-N.
D-A-L?
C-A-L-D-E-R-O-N.
No idea.
Well, more mysteries for you.
How about that? How about that?
There you have it.
That was the biggest
mystery. Peacock says, oh, Ariadne, where did you lose Theseus? This is Cobb's Labyrinth. When I was talking about all those Greek motherfuckers,
Theseus. Yeah, that's one of them. That's one of them.
Yeah, smart. That's really cool. This kid's smart.
Now it's time to...
Man, well, so far, MVP, though. I feel like this movie has so many because each one of these levels requires one of them to do something absolutely extraordinary that was not asked of them originally. And so, like, JGO was supposed to just have a normal little kick, but there's no gravity. He's like, how the fuck am I supposed to do this now? And then Yusuf on dream number one has to fucking thwart off, you know, army people, and his van flips over numerous times.
First off, he should have peed before he went under. That's why it's raining in there.
What?
That's true. But, I mean, the bad guys are still coming after him. And so he has to do some crazy stuff anyway.
Wait, real quick, Andy, when Yusuf, like, his car finishes flipping over, and he's like, yes, and he looks around. It's just one of those moments like, oh, man, I wish I was there to be like, you did it, dude.
Nobody was there. And then Tom Hardy. Well, Ariadne and Tom Hardy also do great jobs where, again, they get to that bottom level and Saito dies. Killian Murphy dies. And Ariadne is like, this isn't over, guys. Like, they to them, that was like the end of it all. And then Leo's like, we're fucking done. And Tom Hardy's like, well, that's it? Shit, I thought we had it. And Ariadne's like, well, what if we do this? And then she kind of is the reason for this movie prolonging itself. And then Tom Hardy just defending himself off of armies of men, dude. Like, fucking 90 dudes coming at him. He's just taking all
the hard man.
He could have given himself better armor. You know what I mean?
Tom, the hard man Hardy.
I guess they all could have dreamed up better armor.
That was a good one.
Yeah. Thank you.
Tom the Hard Man Hardy. That's great.
Specifically.
For the first time in my life, I felt like what it was like to be sitting on the other side of the table for me. I'm like, wow. You did not try that hard on that one.
So it's Ragugugu, guys. Ragugugu.
All right.
Ragu.
Ragugugu.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Rad Guys Talk Good Guys here for the Nolan Universe. The list as it stands right now. Number one, Batman and Wolverine from The Prestige. Number two, Lenny from Memento. Number three, Hoo-ah from Insomnia. And number four, the Very Young Boy from Following.
The Very Young Boy. He's just losing age at this point.
Yeah, yes, he is. Where do we want to put Cobb on this?
Sorry, who's number one?
Number one was Batman and Wolverine from The Prestige.
Oh, who's number two?
Lenny from Memento.
I say Cobb goes number two.
I say Cobb goes number two if it's all a dream. If it's legit, then he's number one.
I would go number one just for how ambitious it all is and like him putting together the team and all that shit. Like he's – Doms are dope, man. Doms are the head of a team. Gets the number one from me.
Andy, where do you want to put him?
I'd put him number two.
So Greg says number two, number two. Kevin says number two, maybe number one, maybe number three.
I meant number one, just to be clear.
One, one, one. I'm going to put him at number two. Ladies and gentlemen, the new listing as it stands is Batman Wolverine from The Prestige. Number two, Cobb Salad from Inception. Number three, Lenny from Memento. Number four, Hoo-ah from Insomnia. Hoo-ah. And number five, the very, very young boy from Following.
No, I don't like you saying that.
How young will he get next week? We'll have to find out. For now, it's time to rank these movies. Current rankings of the Nolan movies. Number one, The Prestige. Number two, Memento. Number three, Following. Number four, Insomnia. It's number
one. Before anybody sounds off, there's just something we need to do, all right? I know, but there's something we need to do, all right? So, the movie opens. It's a beach. There he is, Corn on the Cob himself, Leonardo DiCaprio, washes up. And he looks around and he sees some kids giggling. Just do the whole fucking thing right now. I think it's number two. I think Prestige stays on top.
I agree. I'd put it number two. Although, I fucking love this movie. I feel like it's a movie that we could talk about for hours, but I love The Prestige more.
I like the performances better in Prestige, and I think I liked the truncated story of the Prestige better in terms of.
I just, why are you Greg apologizing? You think the story sucks? Greg, you talked me out of it. I like the performance of this better. I've moved it to number one.
Oh, wow. Look at that. Kevin flapjacking over there. He's got no opinion. Is it days like these where I wish Cecil would sit up, shake his head in disgust at you, and jump out that small window and run free? You know what I mean?
He's sleeping.
Poops on the ground first. I love Prestige. And jump to the window.
I love Prestige, and I think it is a freaking masterpiece. And it being my first time watching it last week, I was absolutely blown away that I could be blown away by an older Nolan movie after having seen the likes of Inception. And despite that, though, I just feel like Inception is the most ambitious movie I've ever seen that succeeds as much as it does. Like, it, I think it is the most ambitious movie ever made. And I think that it hits so much more than it misses. And it might not be perfect, but I think that it doesn't need to be. And I think that there's enough room for interpretations that totally line up that I'm just like, damn, that's cool as fuck. Number one.
Yeah, I think Inception is a more impressive movie. I like the performances more in The Prestige, but you know, Inception just kind of hits on all these notes that I love, of not only the mindfuck moments, but crazy cool espionage shit and a heist, and it just hits on so many levels of things that I love in movies. Fuck, man, this is so tough, dude. We'll put Inception as number one.
I guess it doesn't matter how I vote anymore, does it?
But what's your
I
vote?
Mean, it should. I could flip.
I would
again.
Say, I don't know. Watching both of these, I enjoyed The Prestige more. Watching it back, I just think it's. I think it's a simpler movie. I think it suffers from some of the same issues I have with Inception, where we're going back and forth a lot. Inception, this last time around wasn't as entertaining as I wanted it to be. But having said that, I fully respect the ambition that went behind making this movie, and the fact that they brought the cast together, and the fact that it's so stylish and beautifully shot, that I have to analytically put it above The Prestige. I would probably put it at number one.
Also, Hans Zimmer, man,
so good.
That him.
Also, this
him,
one has Michael Caine in it, you know, so that gives
it's
it more.
True. So true. Does The Prestige.
It's not a blank double.
So the current rankings are number one, Inception, number two, The Prestige, number three, Memento, number four, Following, and number five, Insomnia. Next week, we will do Interstellar. And this Friday, remember, Miyazaki Studio Ghibli in review continues with Kiki's Delivery Service.
Kiki!
Until next time.
Wah. Wah.